Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection in Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
Hi and thanks for listening to the CPSU podcast on DBS Checks in Sport. This is episode 2 of our DBS in Sport podcast. If you listen to episode 1, we covered the absolute basics of DBS checks and eligibility. But in this episode, we're going to answer some of the questions we got from our sports audience, from some of the national governing bodies and CSPs that we work with. I'm joined here again by Helen and Linda from the Disclosure and Barring Service, and by my colleague again, Leanne, who's going to help me out with this podcast. So, Leanne, if you just want to ask the first question for us.
So if my club was working with disabled athletes, how does that affect eligibility for an enhanced check, or does that affect that at all?
So there's one very specific, and there's a list of things. One of the things, again, from a sporting environment, is you might have healthcare professionals who are working in sport. So they might work, I mean, they could work with any of your athletes. And even if they do that only once, then that healthcare professional is in regulated activity with children. But there's a very specific activity, personal care. And in the children's workforce, that's again got very defined criteria that needs to be met for the person to be in regulated activity. So if the child is disabled and therefore needs some form of personal care, toileting or eating, then whoever did it would only have to do it once, and then they would be in regulated activity with children.
So for children, I mean, I think in general, the thing to remember is, apart from the personal care aspect, disability doesn't come into it, because a child is a child if they're under 18.
Yeah.
So we don't need to look at any other qualifying criteria for that person.
And does the same does that same eligibility apply for somebody working with adults with disabilities?
Adults' eligibility criteria is a little more complex. there's almost two routes or two stories. Is the person over 18? Yes. And then you only have to think about, what is your employee going to do for that adult? Are they going to give them healthcare? Are they a healthcare professional? Yes. They only need to do it once. That person's in regulated activity. Are they going to give them personal care because of age, illness or disability? They only need to do it once. So in that regard, thinking about regulated activity with adults in sport, it can be quite easy. And again, our adult workforce guidance separates that out.
Okay.
Where it's more complicated, and we know this happens a lot and we've been having discussions about this, is when you have people in a sporting activity where they don't need those kind of healthcare, personal care types of support, but they might need other types of support. And it gets really tricky then, because not only has the sporting club think, yes, the person's over 18, they also have to think, are they receiving some kind of service, you know, from some other organisation, or because they maybe live in a care home, or because they're receiving social work care or something like that. So they have to identify that. And then once they've done that, which we understand can be tricky in itself, because how can a sporting organisation do that in the main, because they would have to have the conversation. So if they have established it, then they have to think, what's their employee going to do for that person? And then once they've thought of that, they have to think, how often does that person do that?
Yeah.
So once they've gone through again that same thought process, using the information we've got on our website, then that the employee can have an enhanced check, but not an enhanced check with the barred list, because that type of support that would be given wouldn't be a regulated activity.
Mm. So to clarify then, I think the difference between children and adults is that children have that extra layer of them being children. So it's slightly easier to demonstrate because they're under 18.
Because they're under 18.
Exactly, yeah. So in terms of disability, yes, in some circumstances where you're providing personal care, it would take a role. But ultimately, if they're children, like any other DBS check, they're still children.
Yes.
And so you've got the extra layer. But with adults, slightly more complicated because you can't default back on the fact that they're under 18. Yeah. So there's slightly more to demonstrate. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And again, we've put some examples in our support leaflet. And again, within our workforce guidance, we've set it out. We've set it out in this ABC. First of all, find out who your adult is. Second, find out what your person's doing for them. Third, find out how often they're doing it.
So another one of the very specific questions we've had from our audience is around a scenario whereby a member of support staff or maybe an assistant coach is required to carry out some personal care duties as part of their role with working with disabled young athletes. And we're talking about roles that might not necessarily be directly involved in supervising or coaching, instructing young people, but may incidentally be required to carry out personal care duties. Does that change how eligible they would be for an enhanced check?
I think the thing that you need to think about is, if we're talking about it being incidental, then it's not part of their role. And in that case, they wouldn't be checked. If it is potentially going to happen and is part of their role, but they do it infrequently, that's a very different thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's part of their role, you need to consider how often are they likely to do it and how likely is it that those events are going to occur. What we would say is look at the probability. Is it reasonable that that person will have to do it with the frequency that meets the criteria, if there's a frequency required? And in some things that there aren't frequencies required. So personal care, for example, if there's personal care required, then actually how likely is it that that is going to occur? So look at the service users. So if the service users, if there's likely to be a child with a disability who will need, then yes, we would always say then yes, err on the side of caution, it's eligible for a check. If, however, it is just in an emergency situation, there is something in the legislation which says that for emergency situations, then it's not classed as regulated activity as such. So if it was just a case of something happened and the receptionist had to spring into action, it wasn't part of their role, then no, there's no check required in that instance. Mm. So I think that they're the things that you need to think about is it actually part of their role but they just do it less frequently, or is it not part of their role but in an emergency situation it might happen?
Yeah, and I think the advice that we would give on that is exactly as you said, is that in terms of if should be part of their role or not, we'd ask organisations to really look at their procedures and their policies in terms of is it appropriate for that person to have that incidental responsibility. So the next question that we got is, would someone who isn't responsible for coaching children but has gone away with a group of children for a sporting event and is responsible for them in the evenings and overnight mean they're eligible for a DBS check? So in this instance, we're usually talking about parents and volunteers who wouldn't be instructing them during the day, so wouldn't meet that kind of regulated activity in terms of instructing, but would look after them overnight, perhaps in a hotel or wherever they're staying.
From the situation you've described there, no, they're certainly not instructing them, but they're caring for them and they're supervising them. So again, that's something that's set out in legislation that says if somebody's doing that and they do it often enough and caring or supervising is once overnight between 2 and 6, if they've got opportunity for face-to-face contact. So they're ticking all those boxes there, aren't they? Now, you were talking about parents, and I think we get a lot of questions about that as well. If the parent is only there to look after their own child, that's a private arrangement, nothing to do with the DBS check, and the law doesn't cover that, so the sporting organisation couldn't ask for a check for that reason. But if the parent was going along as a volunteer and they were looking after a group of children and their child happened to be in that group, then you're not assessing them as a parent, you're assessing them as somebody supervising a group of children. So in that case, then the sporting organisation could ask that individual to have an enhanced check with the Bardless check, because that individual is in regulated activity with children. And I think when they're having that conversation, especially maybe with volunteers, with parents who do this infrequently, go, why are you asking me for this? I think it's important that they explain to them what that actually means for them, because that means that we'll be checking the BARD list.
And so, I think a lot of the time when you ask parents to do those sorts of things, it's a casual arrangement, or can come across as quite a casual arrangement. Yeah. And the parent themselves maybe take it as that as well. Oh, I'm just looking after, you know, these kids, probably along with their own kids at the same time, and maybe don't realise, you know, the weight of the situation in terms of having that check done. So I think it's important to say that sports need to be very clear when parents are asked to do these things, that that is what it means, and that is what will need to be carried out to make sure they're safe to be looking after other people's children as well as their own.
Absolutely.
Also, just to let sports know, we have got useful guidance on our website about transporting children and also overnight stays, so you can check those out on our resource library.
Just thinking about that as well, again, the parent volunteer, if you like, could also be the person who's driving the children, you know. So in that scenario, again, they're driving children, but if that's all they're doing and they're not looking after them overnight, then the organisation needs to think, how often are they going to be doing it? And to be in regulated activity when they're doing the volunteer driving, they need to be doing it more than 3 times in a 30-day period to have an enhanced check with the BARD list check. Mm. Otherwise, they can have an enhanced check without the BARD list check, which is still a safeguarding measure. And again, it mitigates that risk on that particular instance.
And again, I think it comes down to the clarity of the role that that parent is carrying out. Because I think a lot of the time, you know, parents may make agreements with other parents whose children are also, you know, part of the same sports organisation to give lifts. And that doesn't come into it in terms of, you know, whether that parent has been DBS checked or is suitable to carry that out, because that's a personal arrangement, like you say. However, if they were asked to do it on behalf of the sports organisation, it's important that, again, the sports organisation is clear they're doing that on behalf of them and therefore would be eligible for a check.
And one of the reasons that it's really important that it's an organisation who asks that question is that if they're saying that their volunteer is in a regulated activity role, then that sporting organisation has other duties beyond just getting the check and just making the suitability decision, because they would then be responsible for looking at the behaviour of that person and potentially, if there was an issue, informing DBS about the issue.
I think that brings us nicely on to questions about referrals. So one of the questions from sport is very generalised. What is a referral exactly? And what happens with a referral when it comes to DBS?
OK, so a referral is just a name that we give to something where basically, essentially, people are giving us some information that somebody may not be suitable to work with, either children or adults, or in some instances, both. So at DBS, we've got a number of ways that we get referrals. So one of the ways that we get them is anybody who's committed a very serious offence. So we get told about those from the Police National Computer. So they will come directly to DBS and we will look at them. Another way that we look at them is from anybody who applies for a DBS check for a regulated activity. So one of those checks with a BARD list check. If there's any information on those certificates, we will then look at those individuals as well to consider whether that information is relevant to us considering whether they are suitable to work with children or adults. And the third way, and this is where sports organisations come in and in general employers come in, is where somebody has either in general dismissed somebody because they've harmed or posed a risk of harm to either children or adults or both. There are duties in law that say if you are a regulated activity provider, so when we were talking before about if you get a check on somebody and say they're in regulated activity as an organisation, you become a regulated activity provider. There's a duty for you that if you remove somebody from employment or from a voluntary post where they have harmed or pose a risk of harm to children or adults, or if they've removed themselves, because very often in circumstances people will either resign or remove themselves from the post to avoid any disciplinary action. If you had followed through with disciplinary action, you would in all probability have removed them yourself. So they're the three types of referral that we get.
And what does it mean if a sports organisation did refer to DBS about somebody? What would then happen? What would be the impact of that referral? Would you then notify that person or notify the organisations that they might work with as well as the organisation that's referred to you? If they work for a number of organisations, that often happens in sport. If someone's coaching, say, cricket, they might also coach tennis.
Yeah.
It happens quite frequently.
Yeah, so what would happen is when we get the referral in, we will obviously consider that referral initially, and if there is enough information there for us to actually think that we do need to actually give this further consideration, we would inform the individual themselves that we've received a referral. So we give them what we call an early warning notice, so they know that we've had some information about them and we're then looking at them. What we will do then is we will gather as much information as we can. So we'll take the information that's been provided to us from the sporting body. We will also then look at whether there are any police records or anything else to do with the individual, whether we already hold some information about an individual, because very often we will get referrals from a number of sources, or we'll have them over a period of time. And that's why it's really important that we get them, because there's not enough information once. Once we see a pattern, we may have a different decision. What we don't do is tell any other organisation. The law doesn't allow us to tell any organisation proactively about us receiving the referral or about any barring decision that we make. So it's really important to understand that for sports bodies. And we know that, yes, if you've got somebody who coaches in one area, they are very likely to be involved in other sports as well. So that is where we would always advise, if there is something that you consider serious enough that other organisations need to know about it, as a sporting body, you either take it upon yourself to do that. People are very reluctant to do that with data protection and everything else, and we understand that. The other option you've got is to tell your local police force. The police do have powers where they can, if they think there is a significant risk, they can tell organisations under common law powers. So they could go to another organisation and say, we've had this information and we believe that this person is also working for you, volunteering for you. We think you need to know that. So that's one of the routes that we would always advise people to go down, but we won't tell anybody. Once we've gathered all the information together about the individual for the referral, we will make a consideration. We've got a formal process that we go through. So we will look at it. We'll take a number of factors into consideration. So do they pose a risk of harm? Have they harmed? What are their behaviours? Are there certain patterns? Once we come to a decision, we will then inform the individual. So there's two outcomes. We've decided not to bar them because there's not enough evidence that they should be barred from the entire workforce, because it is from the entire workforce, so it's a very significant
decision.
So it's
not just sport.
From the whole of the... If it's children, for example, they would not be allowed to work in any regulated activity with any child in any role across all of the sectors. So we will tell them, if we decide not to bar them, we'll tell them the outcome, and that's it. We don't go back to the original referring body either, so they would need to find out from the individual themselves if they wanted to take them back on, or then they could contact DBS if they are looking at re-employing them. If we do decide that we're going to bar somebody, we will let them know that we're considering barring them. We've made a decision that we will bar them, unless they make what we call representation to us. That allows them 8 weeks to get in touch with DBS to give us a reason why they believe that they shouldn't be placed on the barred list. So that is their opportunity then. They will get all of the information that we've considered. So they will get a pack with all of that information. they will look at it and then they can give us what they believe are the mitigating circumstances for that as to why they don't pose that, you know, risk of harm. And it is looking at future harm. So that's what we will always consider. It has to be a considered decision. It's about looking at what risk does that individual pose going forward. There are some very small instances where people can't make representations, but that's where we've got what we call an automatic barring offence from the PNC, the Police National Computer. And they are the most serious offences where somebody, there are no mitigating circumstances, the law deems they will be barred. They are a small number of offences.
So are there any circumstances in which sports should be encouraged to make a referral before sort of in-house decision has been made? So are there sort of circumstances where you would expect sports to tell you about someone before perhaps the disciplinary procedure has come to a close, or should it always come to a close and a decision may be made before letting you know?
Ideally, a decision would be made before letting us know, mainly because you won't, you know, a sporting body won't have all of that information that we need, because generally we need that to play out so that we can then get all of the evidence, because we don't actually have powers of investigation. We rely on people giving us that information. So ideally it should play out. That's not to say that if the sporting body did think that it was something so serious and they did have enough evidence. Very often if somebody's committed an offence, it might not be an automatic barring offence, but they may have been convicted of something in the meantime, whereas the process itself will take a long time to play out, but they know there are certain hard facts that they can get to us, then yes, they could send us that then, but it may be that we just have to hold on to it until that decision's made. So I wouldn't say never, but ideally that the process, the disciplinary process, should play out, because it's at that point where the duty exists.
So it doesn't always have to, a criminal conviction doesn't always have to have taken place for somebody to be put on the barring list. That's a decision based on sort of the outcome of a disciplinary or a decision that DBS makes. It doesn't always have to be, okay, that person's been convicted and therefore they go on the barred list.
No, a lot of the types of harm that we see don't necessarily result in
criminal convictions.
There's also instances where the information, it might be that police do hold information, but it's not conviction information. And it may be that in those cases where it falls just short of the evidence needed for a formal prosecution, but we operate on a very different system in that we look at balance of probability as opposed to criminal law, who look at patterns of behaviour. So it may be that doesn't meet the threshold for a criminal offence, but there are patterns of behaviour there which sometimes in themselves aren't actually criminal. It's just the way somebody behaves. So we do have instances where we will bar somebody and there is no criminality, and in some cases no police information at all. It is purely on the information that somebody has sent in to us from employers.
Helen, you've mentioned about information being sent to DBS and you sort of keeping a record of that. How long does DBS keep that information for on an individual?
Yeah, data protection does affect it. Yeah. So obviously we have to keep it for, we have to have a good enough justification for keeping it.
Yeah.
So what we do is we put in place review periods where we will review information after a certain period. So it's quite difficult to say how long we will keep it for. That there's varying times that we'll keep it for, but we do review it on a regular basis and make a new decision. So, you know,
it really depends. It
really
does
depend on what it is and whether we've had new information since, or
like you say, if it's sort of forming a pattern or it's sort of building a kind of a case, I guess, against an individual that could then lead into something more serious, then that would be quite useful information to keep. But the reviews are obviously in place to make sure that that information is.
Yeah, we would always. I mean, obviously, data protection, especially with the new rules that under GDPR as well.
Yeah.
You know, we do have all of that set out, so we've got all of our policies there for that, and then we will just follow those policies.
I just wanted to say, you know, from organisations out there who might think, oh, that piece of information isn't serious enough to send to DBS. We have to have the first amount of information sent to us for us to know about the person, and as Helen said, to consider whether we keep it. What we don't want to do is for there to be a culture of, oh, well, I know about this, but so does somebody else, so maybe they'll refer. If an organisation has enough concern about a person's behaviour that it's even caused them to think about that, then we need to have some information to build on, but only again if they've got, you know, sufficient justification to send them to us. I was looking at some of your posters out there. Don't wait until it's too late, you know. Yeah. So it's that sort of thinking.
It's like everybody's responsibility. If you've got a concern, just, yeah.
Take advice.
Yeah, take advice. Take and find advice. Out if it is relevant to actually log and report.
One of the things that we say, certainly if we're out and about doing presentations to people, is, and, you know, it's something that I try and get across, is if you don't tell us, who will? We won't know about it. And if we don't know about it, we can't do anything about it. So it's really important. I mean, the quality of the information we get is really important, which is why we say, you know, make sure that your processes have completed before it comes to us, unless obviously in those exceptional circumstances. But yeah, if you don't tell us, who will? And that's all that I can say to organisations, because relying on somebody else to do it isn't always the best way. Sometimes then it's too late.
Thanks, Helen. I think that's all we're going to have time for today in terms of questions. So thank you so much for joining us. If you're listening and you still have some more questions about eligibility, or you have any questions about DBS in general, you can always find more information on the DBS website, and that is www.gov.uk/government/organisations/disclosure-and-barring-service. If you've got any questions about DBS in sport specifically, or you've got any sport related questions, you can always head over to our website, and that is www.thecpsu.org.uk. Thank you for listening to this Child Protection in Sport Unit podcast. If you're looking for more information and resources on safeguarding children in sport, please visit our website at thecpsu.org.uk.